just when you start to make it, I got robbed. I just started to make it, then I went to jail, and just started to make it, and then there was a drought and we couldn't get anything. You know, one of the devil's kind of go-to moves is, you know, dangle just enough to get you excited and everything. And just when you think like, all right, if I get there, then I'm going to be done and I'm going to do the right thing. And as soon as you get close, it's like he yanks the rug out from underneath you. I think God knew I needed to be taken away out of society, away from the distractions, hit rock bottom, and finally be humbled that I can't do this on my own.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, welcome everybody. It is so good to be with you today. And before we get started, I want to ask you a big favor. If you have been blessed or encouraged by Made to Advance, I want to ask you to rate and review us. That helps us get the word out about the podcast. And it also helps us bring on more incredible guests like the one we have today. Today, I've got Will Robbins with me. He is an entrepreneur and a former pro indoor and beach volleyball player. Will has coached national beach volleyball teams and is now living and leading in my hometown of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Come on. He's married. He's got two amazing daughters. And I'm really excited for you to hear more about Will's journey today. And so, well, Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me, and I decided to get to know you a little bit more and share on the podcast.
Yes, it's gonna be good. I got a couple Fort Wayne and kind of Indiana questions. I felt like we need to establish some things right from the jump. All right.
Yeah.
So I wore this shirt uniquely for today, which is one of my very favorite IU shirts. And I don't know where you stand on college sports. So I was going to ask IU or Purdue, but then I thought maybe it's neither. And you're like, you know, it's a whole different thing. I don't know. What's your, or let's just keep it between IU and Purdue. Let's say that. Yeah. If you had to go one way, where do you go?
Well, so it's tough because I went to IPFW, Indiana, Purdue, and Fort Wayne. So yeah. I had kind of split allegiance to both. But my major was on the Purdue side. I used to lean a little towards Purdue, but then they hired a friend of mine as the head, you know, coach there for the volleyball team. So they kind of swayed me back a little bit. So, and red is our primary color with Empowered. So yeah, I would have to say I lean a little more towards IU now.
All right, but, let's go. I knew this conversation was going to be good. Who technically has the better, I don't know how the men's volleyball side works, but on either men's or women's, who's got the better program right now as far as rankings or whatever?
So right now, so they only have a club for boys at both of those universities. So it is mainly their women's program. And while IU has struggled for a lot of years, when they hired Steve, he's really turned it around and they're climbing the Big Ten rankings, but Purdue has been predominantly, you know, up there at the top. So they've been a little better on the volleyball side for several years because they've got Dave Shondell, who's been there now probably 15, 20 years and has really established a good culture. And the Shondell family is a volleyball family from the Midwest that's done a really good job and has turned out some top coaches.
So we're rooting for the underdog today. We're rooting for the underdog Hoosiers. Hey, I'm good at it, man. For a lot of years, that was the story of our football program. So, I'm well practiced in rooting for an underdog Hoosier team.
I was gonna say, for a lot of years, you had to be excited though with the success they've had. Last year and the year before, I mean, really turning the program around. It looks like.
Yeah, it's nice to see some wins, and hopefully that continues. I know they probably feel all kinds of pressure to keep it going, which rightly so. So I hope we're headed for a good season. Now I grew up in Fort Wayne, but moved in 1997 to Chicago. And so it's been a while, but we're back all the time. And I got to see your incredible facility, and we'll get talking volleyball in a minute. And but it was amazing last time I was home. Actually, I still say home, even though I haven't lived there since '97. But last time we were back in Fort Wayne, I saw it, which was cool. I'm going to ask you. So Fort Wayne has gotten so much cooler since when I left. What is your favorite thing besides your own business? What's your favorite thing about Fort Wayne, Indiana?
Oh, you know, honestly, I've lived in a lot of cities and traveled around, you know, the U.S., but even international. The one thing I would say I love about Fort Wayne is it's slowly grown to become a bigger city, but it really still has a small town kind of mentality where, you know, there's a sense of community and everybody really still looks out for each other. And, you know, you can walk down the street, people still say hi. It's not like, you know, in the big city, like people just blinders and, you know, go about their business and don't yeah. really bother to try to make friends or communicate with anybody. I find in Fort Wayne, I mean, people still drive by and wave or, you know, still say hi to just strangers walking by, you know, on the sidewalk or even at the grocery store. And so I would say for being slowly growing into a bigger city and a bigger town, they've done a good job of still keeping that small town sense of community and, you know, a place you want to raise your kids. And, yeah, I actually left a year after you. I left in 98 for a period of years. And, you know, and then coming back, you know, it was the reason I did come to Fort Wayne is because at all the cities, you know, Fort Wayne was one that I felt like, you know, is good. You know, it's kind of in the Bible Belt, you know, good, strong, you know, faith-filled churches, but also even schools and, mm-hmm. you know, great community to really raise your family, but have all the amenities of a bigger city.
Right on, right on. So, yeah. Well, shout out Fort Wayne right from the top here. And yeah. I'm curious. I know, you know, I read like your bio, and I'm sure those hearing like, oh, former pro indoor volleyball player, beach volleyball player, coaching, you know, entrepreneur. And I think probably in people's mind, they would jump to, wow, this guy just feels like he probably just jumped right off on that path of success as a young man and just, you know, started going and didn't stop. But I know that you have got a very unique journey that brings you to where you are today, and I would love for us to spend some time talking about it. I don't know. I know a little bit of it, but not a lot. So I'd love you to just go back to kind of like childhood and tell me sort of, yeah, work out your journey for us. Take us through what you've been through.
Yeah. You know, so I guess starting all the way back, you know, my parents divorced at a young age. So, you know, my parents divorced when I was 2. So, you know, had to go through that struggle of, you know, father not really being around. You know, he took care of child support, but really that was about it. So, you know, grew up as a young man, you know, playing every sport, you know, and running around the neighborhood and, you know, getting into, you know, in the beginning, just small mischievous things. But without really having my father there to kind of discipline me, keep me on the right path. And, you know, my mother trying to work 2-3 jobs to try to take care of me and my 2 sisters. Unfortunately, she couldn't do it by herself. And so, yeah, I started, you know, getting into a little bit of trouble, just little fights, you know, theft, you know, some different things, stealing, you know, some candy from the corner store type of thing. But nothing real serious, you know, stayed focused on sports. But, you know, I was gaining a lot of baggage, you know, not having my father there and being angry at him, not being around. And, you know, I still remember, you know, he only came to 1 baseball game at all the sports I played growing up, you know, all the way through to college, and even professionally, you know, he only came to 1 baseball game when I was young growing up. And so, you know, I had a lot of anger issues that I think fed into some of my other issues. And, you know, I started drinking, you know, really pretty heavily in college. And, you know, what started off is, you know, is our society thinks it's just normal for kids to go to college and party and, you know, kind of test the waters a little bit. I've got somewhat of addictive personality, and, you know, I'm kind of one of those where when I'm in, I'm all in. And if it's sports, you know, that's what, you know, got me to the next level in sports. And if it's business, that's great. It's caused me to be able to grow and multiply my business pretty quickly. But if it's into something bad, you know, like drugs and alcohol, pretty quickly, you know, I became a functioning addict, you know, and was, you know, drinking every day. And, you know, then started to, you know, to use a little marijuana and started smoking. And, you know, it really just started a slippery slope where, you know, I was able to keep together my freshman year. But then sophomore year, you know, got a little deeper. And actually, I didn't, you know, my mom was basically trying to take care of us, you know, not having, you know, the financial backing to live that lifestyle of, you know, partying and drinking and stuff like that. You know, I've been an entrepreneur since a young age, so some doors opened up for me to start selling drugs. And, you know, I had some friends back home that I could go home and pick up, you know, some pounds of marijuana or some weed and bring it back to Fort Wayne. And, you know, at that time, a lot of the soccer players, a lot of the students were all smoking. And so, it was kind of a means to an end, so I could go out and, you know, be in the in crowd and be able to drink and party and hang out with all the college kids. You know, I had to make some money, and so that's what it started as, you know, mm-hmm. in the beginning, that hey, I'm just going to make enough money so I can drink tonight, or, you know, be able to smoke a little bit. Then it became an addiction where, well, if I can, you know, if I can make enough to smoke for free and to drink tonight, you know, can I make $1,000 extra bucks? Can I make $5,000 extra? And then it just starts to snowball. And what went from kind of a little side hustle, you know, slash hobby, you know, just kind of a means to an end, it became basically a full-time job. And, you know, it really just, you know, that addictive personality that I have, once I saw how much money I could make with these products, you know, well, there's some bigger products, some heavy drugs that, you know, have a bigger margin. And so, you know, next thing you know, I mean, acid, shrooms, cocaine, like it just slowly started to escalate to selling more and more drugs and heavier drugs. And in, you know, living that lifestyle, you're going to rub elbows with other criminals and other criminals that are in different, you know, I would say arenas of the illegal, you know, kind of environment. And so next thing I know, I was involved with guys that were, you know, cracking ATMs to one, you know, one had a chop shop for motorcycles. Another crew was going around hitting all the VFWs, Knights of Columbus, those type of places that were doing bingo nights. And these guys were cracking safes, you know, and hitting these places for $40,000 or $60,000 after a big bingo night. Just some stuff you would never think of. Just, you know, when you have nothing but time, you know, right. and you're living that lifestyle, you know, you're always just, you know, conniving and looking for, you know, ways to try to make some money. And yeah, before I knew it, I was involved in kind of a whole criminal empire that was really involved in about everything. And slowly I had to, you know, I had to leave Fort Wayne because the narcotics started questioning in Fort Wayne. And so I went to South Bend. And, you know, my older sister was a straight-A student, you know, played volleyball in college too, finished up at IPFW with me and, you know, got right into a big accounting firm and, you know, was kind of the 4.0 student, kind of the golden child growing up, yeah. I, you know, became the black sheep kind of. And, you know, so I tried moving, you know, with her 1 year and trying to get my life together. And before I know it, though, you know, if you don't truly have that heart change, you know, even though you can clean yourself up and move environments, my heart was still the same. And it was only a matter of time before I found my way back into that same crowd. And, you know, and also I'd become addicted to the money. So it's really hard to go back to working a 9-to-5. And, you know, I wasn't able to finish my college degree because of partying and drinking. I became ineligible, not going to class. So I lost volleyball and went from playing D1 with national team aspirations and trying to play professional to not even playing volleyball, you know, becoming ineligible, lost all of that, you know, and really was kind of heading down a dark path. But
are you feeling like it's dark at this point, Will? Like, are you feeling like, man, I'm losing my life right now? Or are you just having the time of your life going, I'm making bank with this and I don't even care about volleyball's not working out right now?
You know, unfortunately, I was so blinded by just that hedonistic lifestyle of, you know, the women, the drugs, the cars, the jewelry, the, you know, VIP at the nightclubs, you know, kind of living ghetto fabulous, we used to call it, you know, really thinking we've made it. And, you know, it really at that time, while there were moments, you know, that, you know, you end up, you know, getting arrested. I had a couple, you know, a DUI. I had assault and battery, a couple different little things. And so there's those brief moments where, you know, you have to spend the night in jail and you start reflecting. And I feel like God, you know, when you're finally sitting in a cell with no other distractions, nobody around you, like my grandmother, who was a spiritual pillar for me, told me, she said, when you're laying there in that concrete room with nobody around, you have no distractions to keep your mind busy and, you know, and, you know, basically keep you distracted from your conscience and from what God is trying to tell you. And, you know, once I didn't have those distractions and I was sitting in the jail cell a couple of times, I really did start reflecting on my life. Like, what am I doing? You know, like I had all this future ahead of me and this promising career. And by several bad decisions, I'd pretty much lost everything. And so there was those moments where, you know, I get out and I'm going to work a normal job and I'm going to get my life together and I'm going to get back to playing and eventually fulfill my dream of playing professional. But once again, my heart hadn't changed and I hadn't committed my life to Christ. I was trying to do it, you know, the manual way, I kind of call it, you know, trying to do it the worldly way, the self-help, fix it yourself type thing. But since my heart wasn't changed, it was always temporary. It'd be a month, 2 months, 3 months. And then I would see the money I'm making and remember the money I could make in 5 minutes with a couple phone calls. And, you know, I would always end up just digressing right back to that lifestyle. And before I would know it, I'd be caught right back up in the middle of the game and, you know, making a bunch of money and having a lot of fun. And so I do think, you know, I'd say 90% of the time I was just having the time of my life. But there'd be those nights, you know, that whether I got in trouble, something bad happened, I got robbed, you know, just some different life or death situations. You know, there was a time at gunpoint, at knife point, like, you know, you kind of have those.
Yeah.
You know,
what am I doing?
Yeah. Those wake up moments like, how did I get here? What am I doing? And so, but it was never, you know, I never took that next step that I, you know, just trying to commit to the Lord and trying to figure out my purpose. Until it really came to a head in 2001. So I left college in 98. So really end of 95, beginning of 96 is when I really started kind of selling a little bit. And then it kind of ramped up all the way till 2001. And by then I had moved from Fort Wayne to South Bend to Lafayette, then down to Indianapolis, each catching a little case or, you know, the cops were starting to get on to, you know, what we were doing there. So I had to leave the city. But then down in Indianapolis is when I got with an even, you know, I would say rougher crowd and a much more serious crowd in the illegal, you know, kind of drug trade, but also so many other illegal activities, and really went off the deep end. And then for the first time, I actually started using cocaine and using it pretty heavily. Because that was kind of the drug of choice where I was actually connected to a lot richer population down in Indianapolis that didn't want the lighter drugs. They wanted the harder stuff that would be out of their system in a couple of days. And so I found myself using a little bit because I was selling so much and to try to stay awake and hang out with these different people. And before I know it, I was probably, you know, using more cocaine than my customers were. And that really, I mean, in a period of 6 months, just caused my whole life to spiral out of control. And to the point of my final crime was actually a bank robbery. And I had one of my best friends that I grew up with, was a stellar football player, was a star running back in high school, went on to play at Indiana State, but sustained several injuries, got hooked on painkillers, and then, you know, became an alcoholic on painkillers and mixing the two, and he went down a really dark path and was about to lose his apartment, about to lose his car. And we had always kind of joked around about, you know, why are we doing all these petty crimes? You know, what are we doing? Like, let's just hit one big job and be done. And, you know, our goal was always, it was kind of a means to an end. We wanted to have a bar, a nightclub, you know, and a young, you know, lost, you know, kid, I was thinking I want to party the rest of my life. So why not open up a bar and then I could party the rest of my life and make money? And so, yeah, we came close a couple times, even did a teenage dance club. Luckily, it never came to fruition. But that was always kind of the end game. And, you know, while most people get into illegal activities is it's, you know, with the end in mind. But the problem is once you get caught up in kind of that cycle of sin, you typically never get out. You know, it's just when you start to make it, I got robbed. I just started to make it, then I went to jail. And just started to make it, and then there was a drought, and we couldn't get anything. And so there were just so many times. And to me, it's almost like kind of, you know, one of the devil's kind of go-to moves is, you know, dangle just enough to get you excited and everything. Yeah. And just when you think like, all right, if I get there, then I'm going to be done, and I'm going to do the right thing. And as soon as you get close, it's like he yanks the rug out from underneath you, where you'll never get out of that cycle if you're trying to do it yourself. And so, yeah, I finally got to a point. We actually were successful with the bank robbery. And so a little over $200,000, scot-free. You know, I ended up That was in November of 2001. I spent Christmas of 2001 down in Costa Rica. And a girl that I was dating at the time had some property down there. So I went down for a couple of weeks, was even looking at potentially buying property and thinking about staying out of the country for a while. But while I was down there, you know, God slowly over a period of months had really been working on my heart. And believe it or not, before I actually went into the bank robbery, you know, I've always had a head knowledge of God and grew up, you know, more of, you know, God is a genie in a bottle type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of Christians or people who call themselves Christians, you know, they pray to God when they want something or they want to get out of trouble, but they haven't truly made Jesus Christ their Lord and Savior and are really seeking to follow him and his purpose. And so I was kind of one of those Christians, you know, that just prayed when I needed something. So I even prayed before I went into the bank that if this went, you know, if God would allow nothing to go wrong, you know, nobody get hurt and to get away with it, I would stop everything. And so I was always known, you know, in the streets as a man, you know, of my word. So I literally stopped everything. We got away with the bank. I stopped selling everything. And really for a period of time, I was looking at kind of retiring and trying to open up my club. But unfortunately I had, you know, was involved in so many other things that slowly each person in our organization was slowly getting arrested and telling on the next person. And like, and it was just a domino effect, to the point that 32 of them testified against me, in my grand jury hearing to get my federal indictment.
Wow.
And only one of them actually knew about the bank. So 31 of them were telling about every other criminal activity they've ever seen me involved in. And, you know, we had guys getting arrested with drugs, guys getting arrested in some of our stolen cars, guys, you know, just nonstop people were getting told on, and the whole thing was slowly collapsing. And unfortunately, I was kind of the main guy that, because I was the one who did go in with the bank. And even though my co-defendant was the one who planned it, and really I was doing it, you know, to try to help him out and to help myself to retire a little bit. But, you know, I actually got the leadership and ended up catching more time and was one they really wanted. So everybody kind of told on me. And honestly, it was the best thing that could have happened to me at that time. Wow. It's kind of like Joseph, you know, being sold into slavery by his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That was needed long term, you know, for, you know, the Israelites to be able to sustain, you know, in the famine. I even, just like Joseph, had an opportunity. You know, I've seen several people that did testify against me after I got out and after I had come home.
Wow.
But God had really put it on my heart the same way that Joseph, when he saw his brothers, you know, forgave him and told him, hey, what you guys meant for evil, God meant for good. And, you know, and God was able to, you know, keep the Israelites alive during the famine during that time because of Joseph and what he had done. And so, you know, I've had to talk to a couple of guys that literally one turned, saw me, turned and ran back out of the actual building. He walked in when he saw me. I had to stop him and let him know, like, listen, I'm not coming for you. I'm not after you. Like, you actually did me a favor. If you hadn't have told on me, I would have ended up dead or facing a life sentence. And so I really, you know, God pretty early on, let me back up. So when I was in Costa Rica, I really for the first time called out to God to make himself real to me and to show his purpose to me. And, you know, I really knew that there was a God. And I also knew that he wasn't, you know, he didn't create me and design me to do the things I was doing and living the life I was living. So I finally, for the first time, I felt like really called out to God with a heartfelt plea to just make himself real to me and show me my purpose in life. And so over a period of 2 to 3 months, he really did. I mean, God was like just, you know, so alive to me where he was speaking through a pastor. My mother had just gotten saved right before me and my stepfather, and was able to go to church with them one time. And like, you know, God really spoke through the pastor. Wow. There was just several Christians in my life that were really pouring into me at that time. You know, I even got followed all around the north side of Indianapolis one night and ended up, you know, having a, you know, pulled over, you know, sitting in a parking lot, just started praying to God, like, God, you know, what's going on? I just had a feeling I was about to go to jail and it was all going to come crashing down. And it was the craziest vision I've ever had, where it was like watching a movie, you know. It was like God, you know, showed me and told me if I'll give my life to him and truly trust him and turn it all over to him, that he would work out all of this mess and eventually bring me out on the other end of it and be able to give me that house on the hill with a beautiful wife that I've always wanted. And so I you know, it was one of those things that, you know, God was just showing himself to me. And I mean, even to the point showing me actually getting arrested, you know, and that was kind of the final thing. And it was so bad. I drove home to my girlfriend's house, like, I'm about to go to jail. Like, I got followed all the way here. God showed me a vision. I'm about to go to prison. They're coming to get me. I thought they were coming that night. It was that, yeah. It kind of freaked me out so bad.
Yeah.
But sure enough, you know, it was not even a month later. It was a couple weeks later. They came and got me, and I got surrounded by FBI agents, and it was, you know, one of those scenes like a movie, and unmarked cars came out of nowhere and surrounded us in the apartment complex and had us all at gunpoint and pulled us out. And that was the...
When you say us, who's us at that point? Just you and your roommates or what?
So I had my girlfriend at the time, the one I was with, and then I had one of my friends. We had some dealerships that we worked with that we got our cars through that we could pay cash for. And I actually knew about 10 minutes beforehand that they were coming, because I actually got a phone call. They had just picked up my co-defendant, and they had kicked in his door at his apartment and at his girlfriend's house, got him. So I got a phone call saying they just got Rod. They're coming to get you next. And I jumped in the car, one of my friends driving, girlfriend in the back, and thought I had already called the dealership. Hey, I need to come swap out vehicles. Didn't even make it out of the parking lot. Soon as we started to pull out of the parking lot, we just got surrounded. And that was the last bit of freedom I had until. So that was March 21st of 2002. And then, I didn't come home until just before Christmas of 2008. And so, got released at the beginning of 2009 and ended up having to do about 7 years in the federal system. But, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, it was actually the best thing for me, because I was that young knucklehead who thought he knew everything and nobody could tell me anything. And unfortunately, I had a decent amount of intelligence that, you know, actually worked against me, because I thought I could just outsmart everybody and not live according to God's way and still be successful. But really, you know, hitting rock bottom. And, you know, originally I was facing 27 to life because the way they compile the charges and they, you know, to scare you, especially in the federal system, they'll throw everything at you in hopes that you'll just plea out. And 98% of the people take a plea agreement. I was facing a life sentence all of a sudden, and that's when it got real. For the first time, like I said, my grandmother had kind of told me, like, you don't have any distractions. So it's just you and God now. You can't go get drunk. You can't call a girlfriend. You can't stay busy so you can forget about the life you're living. It's just you and God. And it's you know, when you're sitting there in a jail cell in solitary confinement, you got to start being honest with yourself, and you start kind of having that moment of reflection of what am I doing and how did I end up in a place like this? And, you know, so God had really just once again orchestrated, for a pastor to come in who had never been into a jail before, had just moved from Arizona, offered to come into the jail and speak. They told him they were actually full, had too many volunteers, that they'd put him on the wait list. Well, sure enough, Easter Sunday, Resurrection Sunday there in 2002, they gave him a call, and Dr. Cosby said, I'll come in and preach the message. And he came in and preached the message, and myself and one other guy who was the biggest bully in high school, we both got saved. And he's probably 6'6" and probably 270 pounds. And at that time, I was probably 220 and, 6'4". So here's these two big guys that everyone knew, like, this is the big bully and this is the dude who just robbed a bank. And we're both crying like babies. And there's probably 40 inmates in that little service just all looking like, what's going on? Like, these two are getting saved. These are the two that are going up for the altar call. And like, you know, really, God did, like, from that moment, I mean, God really turned everything around. And, you know, Dr. Cosby, you know, helped set up my college courses. He came to visit me every institution I went to as I went through my system, you know, through the system.
Wow.
And really just was a spiritual mentor and just really helped me to get rooted and grounded. And, you know, I really, you know, I needed that time away, kind of like Paul did, you know, as he was making that conversion from Saul to Paul.
Right.
And I went from Bill and Billy and all my nicknames, you know, back to Will and William, my real name. And, you know, I needed that time of separation like he did, you know, that to really get rooted and grounded, because it would have been tough. I don't know that I would have been able, if I would have been free, if I would have been able to turn my life around. You know, for me, I think God knew I needed to be taken away out of society, away from the distractions, hit rock bottom and finally be humbled that I can't do this on my own. And so, yeah, I think, you know, me being away out of society and then getting just blessed with such a great group of Christians while I was in there. I mean, guys that had really hit rock bottom, too, and turned their lives around and were just some of the most dedicated and sincere Christians I've ever met. And so many groups coming in from the outside that would just come in and love on the inmates and just, you know, try to instill hope, you know, in a lot of these guys' lives who were, you know, facing, you know, who actually got sentenced to life sentences. And I mean, we had such good groups that, I mean, there was one group we went every single morning at 5:30 in the morning and went through, a Bible study and a chronological Bible. So we went and found a Bible that, you know, they kind of try to put all the stories in a chronological order. So we went through a chronological Bible in a year, just every morning. And then we were doing a Bible study. And I mean, I haven't had since I've been home that committed of a group that is waking up every morning for an hour, hour and a half and go through the Word and through a Bible study. So, yeah, I got really rooted and grounded, and God just started preparing me for when I came home. And I mean, I could tell you story after story how he showed me favor, where I was able to get into an apprenticeship program for biomedical equipment repair, which had a 2-year wait list. I was able to get right in and get all the training that I needed. So when I came home, my brother-in-law and sister had just started a medical equipment company like a year before. So I came home and had all the training, all the experience that they needed to be able to sell the equipment and to repair and fix it. And so I came home, was their first full-time employee, and God really just used that to be kind of my rock and foundation, where it really, you know, helped me financially, helped me get plugged back into my family, my community, you know, was back up here in Fort Wayne where I had, you know, left after, you know, trying to play some volleyball, but I had gotten back with the alumni and got really connected with them. And before I know it, I was back playing at a really high level, just with the alumni, playing in some fun tournaments. But one of my buddies was, was former alumni, a little younger than me, was one of the best right sides in the world at that time, and got phone calls all the time from coaches and agents looking for Americans. And he got we played in a tournament on a Saturday. Sunday, he got a phone call looking for an outside hitter. And he said, actually, I got a guy. He said he had a little bit of a unique story, but he said he should have been on the national team, but instead he went to federal prison. But he's got his life together now, and he's playing at a really high level. And so we put together, I mean, it was the lowest budget highlight video you've ever seen. Some little, you know, tournaments, a men's tournament. I think even one of them was a co-ed tournament, but showed a few highlights of me hitting and playing. And based on his word, they sent a contract. And I actually had to go through the legal process to be able to try to get international travel, because I was still on federal probation. And I had only been home for like a year. And so God showed me favor with the judge, just with everybody, that I was able to get international travel, go over to play overseas, play professionally, you know, really regain, you know, my playing career. But, you know, it was just story after story, you know, where God
put me in
the right place. Yeah, protected me while I was in there. There was a couple big prison riots that God protected me from. I mean, there was just a lot of dangerous things going on inside of, obviously, a prison that he just constantly showed me favor with, whether it was inmates, whether it was staff, you know, even the judge, you know, getting the lightest sentence possible. with all the crimes. I had six state cases by the time I caught my federal case, where I just kept accumulating these little petty, you know, cases that kept just, you know, getting worse and worse till I finally had the, you know, the bank robbery. But God took care of all those too. Believe it or not, I was on probation for a case down in Florida while I was in federal prison.
No kidding.
It really took care of all of my past, where I was able to come home with a clean slate.
Okay.
You know, nothing hanging over my head, and, you know, really just start over. And this is part of the testimony I give when I go in and speak to kids is, you know, the same way I made a lot of bad choices that led, you know, to my life kind of self-destructing in prison. When I came home, I started making all the right choices, and not all the right, but, you know, like trying to be a man after God's own heart, like David. You know, I made a few slip ups, but I always, you know, tried to repent, try to get back focused on him and what he wanted me to do. And God just, I mean, in 5 years, I went through five businesses that each grew to the next. And I set the first one up while I was overseas playing and came home, started with seven kids, just doing lessons and some sports performance. And by the end of the summer, I had over 200 kids.
No kidding.
I canceled my contract to go back overseas. I had gotten married to Ashley, my wife, right before I actually left to go overseas. And so, you know, for the sake of our marriage and our future, you know, I canceled my contract. You know, I had kind of filled that bucket of, you know, getting back to that level. And I felt like that's all God wanted me to do, just to kind of show how he can restore, you know, every area of your life. And, you know, really got to that level. And that really not only helped my testimony, but it really helped springboard me in my business, you know, kind of to the top in our area.
Right.
When I came home, you know, I've now got professional experience. I had some D1 experience. I actually did another certification. I did one while I was locked up for personal training. But then when I was overseas, I did another one, a high school strength and conditioning specialist. Really got the education I needed so I could come home and really train athletes in sports performance, but also in the mechanics of volleyball and start doing lessons. And like I said, it took off where I had to. Yeah, for the sake of my marriage and for the business and God lead me. I had to cancel the contract and kind of put it into that chapter. And really I went through a couple different gyms. One was like a studio.
When you started the first business, was it so grassrootsy as far as the number of people involved? Like, and at that point, it's like you're kind of building into youth at that point, I think, right?
Yeah.
So was it so grassrootsy that you didn't, I mean, you're starting a business, but it's not like you have any, I mean, actually, you kind of, in a sense, you do have actually starting your own business background and not the best kind of businesses. I mean,
slightly different business model. Yeah.
Well, I realized as I was about to ask the question, I started rethinking it because I'm like, you know, you don't really have any business experience. All of a sudden, you're launching a business that starts growing. But honestly, a lot of people say who have you know, criminal background, like it is building a business. A lot of principles cross over. Did you feel like it was, how do I do this business? Or did it come naturally to you to just build that thing? Did it feel like a risk? Did it feel like I have no idea what I'm doing? Or did it feel like, oh, it's no big deal. I just, you know, hang out my shingle and see what happens.
Yeah. You know, I think you're spot on. I mean, if somebody can sell drugs and somebody can build a business in the criminal lifestyle, you know, you learn all the same basic business principles that you would in college, usually just the hard way. We kind of call it the school of hard knocks. It's through trial and error and trying to listen to other, you know, kind of OGs, those original gangsters, those guys that have been around, you know, we're trying to learn from. So I kind of had that street knowledge. And it's very similar, you know, just selling a legal product or a service. So I did have that. But also, God, I felt like just, while I never finished my degree and I don't have technical business experience, you know, I felt like God just, you know, ended up putting the right pieces nonstop. Just if I needed an accountant, you know, well, my sister was an accountant, you know, I needed a lawyer. Well, you know, I started training, you know, a girl whose dad was a lawyer, you know, like God slowly put different pastors, different, you know, real estate, you know, moguls into my life and business experts. And really, I've got a nice mentor group. I call my spiritual advisory board that, you know, were some dads that I trained their athletes early on, and they just knew I was a high-level guy that, you know, had a past, but they were strong Christians and understood, you know, the power of God to change somebody's life. So they started letting me train their daughters, and I was able to get all of them to college and beyond. And they all just really believed in me and just started giving me the help that I needed to be able to build each business. But it did start, like, I was just doing lessons at a local church, you know, just renting the courts. Yeah. And then it grew where I started to have to bring in 3-4 other coaches and for them to do some of my lessons so I could go and, you know, keep building my lessons. And then eventually, opened up a studio that was just a small 2,000 square foot studio, and was doing boot camps and spin classes. Had put a beach court in my side yard. So I was trying to train and I was playing professionally on the beach at that time. While I retired from overseas and indoor, I did still pursue beach and was traveling around and the AVP, the big pro tour. And then there was another one, the NBL at that time. But as I was traveling, I was doing a lot of research about building a volleyball club and building a volleyball program. And so I've always been one of those that while I didn't like school and education when I was young, I realize now why. It was because I was learning or being forced to learn a lot of things that I just didn't feel were relevant. But once I found what I was passionate about, well, then, you know, God really just stirred up a hunger and a passion to really just pursue education. And so when I started run across a hurdle or a roadblock that I didn't know in business, I would just go get a book. I'd go, find an expert in that area and pick their brain and just do the research that I needed in that area to gain the knowledge.
It's funny how that is when you finally figure out what you're excited about, how much you enjoy learning and pressing into that area. And I see that, I've heard that in other people's stories. I'm seeing that in my youngest son right now, who's never been a big school guy, but he's now feeling this call to ministry and his relationship with God's really taken off. All of a sudden, my man's reading the Bible like I've never seen him read anything. Yeah, he's something shifted in his heart, number one, but then it's aligned with like this passion now of, man, I want to see what God's done in my life. I want to see other people experience this. So he's just getting after it. But your point is so good. Like, you got to find that passion to be able to find the energy to keep on going like that. It's cool hearing you talk about how much those volunteers that came into prison meant, because I think we're right now in the process. We don't have a prison in close driving distance from where our church is, but we've got a couple of jails in our county and the neighboring county. And we're just beginning to really kind of ramp up ministry to those jails. And I think that sometimes people think, oh, what good am I going to do? You know, I don't have this background. I haven't served time. I haven't whatever. And it's cool to hear just on a personal level, just to hear you talking about what you just shared, because, I mean, it sounds like those folks were making a real difference, even if they hadn't served time or couldn't identify with some of the background that you and others had who were actually in there.
Yeah, no, if you guys are thinking about it, I definitely would encourage you to, because you know, people, once they hit rock bottom, you know, a lot of these guys start to lose hope and they start feeling like, I'll never get out. Or if I get out, I'll never have a future. You know, society is going to look at me as an outcast. Everyone's going to write me off, you know, and they really can go to some really dark places. But to have people come in and normal people love on you and let you know it's okay. And just because you made some bad choices, you know, there's still hope, and there's, you know, you can always turn it around. You can always regain your position in society or in your family. And no matter what the devil takes away or your bad choices and sinful nature take away, you know, God always has a way and an ability to be able to restore, you know, every area of your life back to its original purpose. And I think, you know, having groups come in just gives these inmates the hope that they can turn it around and that society will welcome them back one day. Because if not, a lot of these guys start thinking like, well, there's no hope. Society's always going to look at me as an outcast. I'll never get a job. I'll never be able to be a productive citizen in society. Well, why do you think they go back to committing crimes and 3 out of 4 go back to prison? Because they don't see any other path to be successful.
Right.
But if you can have some good groups kind of coming in and reminding them that, no, there's people that understand the power of God to change your life, and there's going to be a support system. God will always provide the right people around you, if you're listening and if you're following him, to be able to support you and to rebuild your life and everything that you destroyed. So, I think it's huge and super important that there's good people coming in to minister to these guys, because a lot of them don't have family. They don't have friends that are trying to support them, or they don't have positive voices. You know, they got criminals that are teaching them how to be better criminals.
Right.
They don't have people telling them that, no, there's a better way. Great, you're good at sales. Let's figure out a legal product that you can sell, that you can have life in the future, not these illegal products that will always lead to death and destruction.
Yeah, that's such a good word. And it's so cool in your story to see how, as you started making those decisions that were really honoring God first, how God does show up in ways that you can't predict or expect, that he kind of, it's not just you grinding, making the right decisions and making everything happen in your own strength. All of a sudden you're like, wow, he's closing some gaps here that I didn't even know I had through other people. I want to shift gears, and with our remaining time a little bit here, we'll have to kind of move through a couple of these questions, but I think they'd be real cool ones to hear your perspective on. So I just appreciate you hearing your testimony and story. I think that's going to be such an encouragement to everybody who listens. But here you are now, you're training so many athletes. And I thought it would be interesting to hear perspective as someone who has played professionally, who right now is equipping so many others. In our culture, obviously, sports sometimes, I mean, it's like, you know, idol level sort of attention. And it's, I think it's hard because you've got to do certain things to compete at the highest levels. But it also seems like sometimes sports can almost become a little G-God. And I just be curious, I know you're really trying to run your academy in such a way that, you know, it's coming out of that kind of Christian perspective. How do you help people perform and train at the highest levels while not turning volleyball into a god?
Yeah, it could be tough. You know, like a lot of people, they tend to find their identity in something other than Christ. And so as an athlete, it's really easy to kind of make that sport your idol and, you know, find your identity in that sport and think that that's all I'm good at. That's what I'm fully committed to and dedicated my life, and start to worship and serve that sport. But what we try to remind kids is ultimately God has a much bigger plan than this sport. You know, while sports are fun, you know, and you'll be able to play them until usually 21, 22, you know, it's only 5% go on to play in college, and only 2% of those go on to play pro. So as we say, you're going to be successful in something other than volleyball. And our goal is to make sure that, yes, you maximize your potential, and you can use college and volleyball as an avenue, you know, to get a good education, free education, to have influence and be able to be a role model. But in the end, it's still a game, you know, and it's still a sport. And its true intention is to teach you the life lessons, because I truly believe that sport does imitate life. And if you can learn how to be a good teammate, work ethic, dedication, discipline, all those things in sports, you can then transition that into life and into business. And so, you know, I really have tried to kind of make sure that, you know, these kids aren't getting their identity caught up in the sport, and keep pointing them back to Christ. But I had a pastor friend, actually Dr. Cosby, challenged me pretty early on. He said, you know, I have no doubt with your background, your knowledge, you can help these kids jump higher, run faster, get a college, you know, scholarship. But in the end, if they die and go to hell, what'd you really do for them? And that kind of hit me like, oh, yeah, because I know how to get bigger, stronger, faster. You know, I know how to get, you know, teach a kid how to hit and do these different things. But if I'm not teaching them about Christ, and I'm not trying to, you know, minister to them and help them find, you know, Christ and eternal life, well, then all I did was just make them better in this worldly kind of, you know, experience. And in the end, sometimes almost push them further away from God, because the more success sometimes they have in sports or in life, they start to think they don't need God. And they think that all this success is because I'm a hard worker and because I'm this and I'm that. And not realize, no, God gave you all these gifts and talents. And just the way that, you know, same way he gave them to you, if not properly handled, he could take them away from you. And like I saw, I lost, you know, for a while, I thought I was done. I tore my ACL and, you know, lateral medial meniscus. I didn't think I'd ever play sports again. And, you know, lots of stories on how God opened up doors while I was in the federal system, because I did it while I was locked up, go and have one of the top surgeons at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, did my knee surgery. And, you know, I got shipped to the medical facility there that, you know, I wasn't even supposed to go there. I was supposed to go to Boston. Uh-huh. Like, God just orchestrated so many things, yeah, for me to be able to go there, have my knee surgery, be able to play again.
Do you guys end up weaving Christian principles in?
Experience. Oh, what's that?
Oh, sorry. Do you guys end up weaving kind of Christian principles into the whole experience of as you're training kids? I mean, and is it organic, or is it real, like, is it real formal and part of kind of the curriculum, so to speak?
So, yeah. So we've done a little bit of everything. I've tried everything from 30 minutes with speakers once a week, 40 minutes, you know, kind of going through a Bible study or some type of character study. We did some FCA material, to now we've actually gone to 3 to 5 minute videos. And I have a full production crew, and it's got a little TV studio in one of our old offices with green screen and lights and cameras. And we found that, you know, just putting together a short message of 3 to 5 minutes really helps to plant the seed. And it circulates a lot farther. And then, you know, if we can just plant the seed, then God has a way and an ability to go and water and, you know, help that seed grow. So, yeah, we do weekly. We try to do a 3 to 5 minute video that goes out to all of our club members, and try to go and take them through, you know, everything from different scriptures to even motivational quotes, you know, that are founded on, you know, Christian principles. Mm-hmm. But just try to, you know, teach them life lessons, try to teach them about Christ, try to teach them, you know, leadership, character building. We try to really, you know, even mental conditioning, kind of the mental toughness training, helping them to perform at a high level under pressure. We try to mix that all in that weekly message, and really try to be intentional weekly that we're, you know, pouring into planting a seed and then making sure our coaches are watering those seeds and looking for opportunities to, you know, really try to go and point the different, you know, scenarios that happen on the court, point them towards a life lesson or a Christian principle or, you know, a truth out of the Bible and help bring some of those truths to life through sport. And
That's really, really cool. I love that model. Are all of your coaches, do they end up being like followers of Jesus, or are they, I mean, I got to think there's some kind of people are in different places spiritually. I mean, the nice thing about the video is it's, you're making it, so you know what it's going to say, but are the coaches kind of locked in on the spiritual side of things?
So that's been a big question and a big kind of debate for a while is, do we just hire Christians?
Right.
Well, now we've gotten so large, we've got 2 facilities, we've got 5 clubs, we've got total just in travel teams, we've got about 75. So about 750 kids just in our travel programs. And we probably have another 2,000 that rotate through renting our turf or our courts in both buildings. And so with having so much programming, it's next to impossible to find that many strong Christian coaches.
Yeah, that's what
I've found is I use it as an opportunity to kind of evangelize a little bit and, you know, really, you know, we're giving the message, you know, in those videos. But I'm also doing coaches clinics with my coaches once a month and looking for opportunities in those coaches clinics to give them more than just volleyball. And, you know, we have some basic policies, you know, no cussing at the kids. You know, you can be demanding but not demeaning. And we've put parameters in place, you know, based on Christian principles and how they should behave. Mm-hmm. But no, we don't. I mean, we've got over 100 and some coaches now. Yeah. It's tough to find that many strong Christians. What we look for is good character people where their heart's in the right place. And then somebody who is open and who is, you know, going to continue to, whether they're Christian or not, they're going to share the messages and still try to push, you know, all the truth that we're trying to pour out through the scriptures and these messages. So, yeah, we've had a lot of success with coaches, you know, through helping lead some of this stuff, have actually come to Christ.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You know, and then we have a few that, you know, slowly weed themselves out and, you know, and they're just not ready. And so God hadn't really prepared their heart. And so they're here for a year and they'll end up leaving and go to another club. But really.
And even then it's seeds planted from the, you know, from the time that they had with you. I what's really cool about the model that you guys are doing, I mean, it is to scale anything, you're going to have people of a variety of spiritual backgrounds. And I think that's just whatever the business is. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is you've set a culture that says, hey, we're going to be faith-based. I mean, this thing, just, we're not going to hide it. We're just going to name it. I mean, it's on your website,
yeah.
But it's not going to be so strong that, you know, somebody who's not, you know, all in sort of spiritually would be immediately repelled. They can plug in. And it just, I love the idea that it's really created this culture where people can have seeds planted in a very, you know, approachable kind of a way and take next steps. It's a really, real, really cool combination of like sport and the spiritual side of things.
Yeah.
I want to keep an eye on time, so I'm going to ask you just two last questions. One, I'd just be curious to hear what you personally do to just stay spiritually strong. You've obviously, you're a husband, you got two daughters, you've got this company you're leading. What do you personally do to make sure that your intimacy with Jesus isn't getting lost in the busyness of everything you have on your plate?
Yeah, well, trust me, probably like you. I mean, I've tried about everything, and I've, you know, continue to keep trying to find a routine where I can have a balanced life and make time for God, make time for my wife, make time for my kids, you know, and not just get so focused on the business. So, yeah, my routine right now is, you know, I wake up at 5:30 and I have a little devotion time. And I actually typically do it with my wife, have a little devotion time in the morning. We work out together as a family 3 days a week. My kids are usually up by 7, so my little girls are down in the weight room with us and you know, trying to work out. So we do a little family workout, yeah. And I really try to get everything done before 9 a.m. where I can have my, you know, some time with the family, get the exercise in physically, spiritually. And really, I found that if I don't have that routine in the morning and I just go straight to work, I go straight to the business side, it does something to you mentally where, you know, where staying rooted and grounded in the word, seeking God first and his plan for the day really helps give you that peace of mind and that direction to know that you're on the right path. And, you know, it really sets you up for success for the day. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I could tell when I have to go to an early morning meeting and I end up skipping out on my routine in the morning,
yeah,
I find
yeah.
myself just a little quicker temper, you know, just not as patient, not as kind, you know, not as yeah. gracious. With, you know, some of the things that happen. So, yeah, I'm super intentional now. It took me a lot of years to learn that. And I thought, you know, I've read the Bible a lot while I was locked up, you know. I'm good. Like, you know, if I don't stay rooted and grounded, it's a slippery slope real quick back yeah. to that old lifestyle and some of those old desires. So, yeah, I encourage any of your listeners, you got to have a routine. And to me, if you don't seek God first thing in the morning, before you know it, your day will get out of control and you won't seek him, you know, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like working out. You know, if you don't work out typically first thing in the morning, most of us get too busy. Then you're too tired later to mm-hmm. work out. Well, days go by, months go by and you're not working out. And so
right.
spiritually, physically to me is there's a lot of similarities. And yeah, it's got to be a daily routine or you'll lose.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, and I love everything you said because it's you know, it's one of those things for those who are listening. You know, you hear your pastor say it, but then when you hear other people say it who are doing their thing and being successful at it, and I couldn't agree more. Just the importance of habit and the importance of saying and also just putting first things first when it comes to our habits, because most of us are not disciplined enough to come back to the workout, or I'm gonna read the Bible right before I go to bed. I'm gonna just spend some time with God, and I'm just that's a plan to fail for 99.9% of people. So it sounds like you got some good rhythms. You're ahead of me on the working out with kids game, though. I like that idea, man. That's great. I could just see your kids out there figuring it out, and even if they're not doing some big workouts now, the reality is that pattern of this is what we do as a family, yeah. that's going to be with them their whole life. Like you get up and, you know, spend time, whatever, you know, they see if they know mom and dad are doing devotions or whatever, and then working out, they're going to be like, well, that's just how you do it. You know, that's how you do yeah. a healthy life. So I love that. Anything else that you want to share before we end the conversation today, Will? Anything else on your heart?
No, I mean, yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, I just encourage everybody. I mean, have a routine, you know, and make sure you seek God early. You know, you seek him often. And just like physically, if you don't work out, you know, that old use it or lose it type of thing. Yeah, if you're not constantly working, getting stronger, those spiritual muscles, well, you're naturally going to get weaker and weaker. And before you know it, you can find yourself caught up in some different sinful things. So I've just found, you know, just with myself that, you know, a lot of the stuff that scripture does talk about is for a reason. It's practical, you know, and seeking God, you know, first, you know, and his kingdom and all those things. Like God has a way of taking care of everything else throughout the day, all your stresses, you know, all the work you have to do, you know, family struggles, relationship problems. Like he has a way, if you'll keep seeking him and looking for his truths and asking for his guidance, he has a way of always, you know, working it out, bringing the right people, bringing the right scripture, the right truth across your plate to really give you that aha moment. And honestly, I mean, it's the only reason I'm a two-time convicted felon now, and I've got, you know, multi-million-dollar business, and I got a hospital partner, an orthopedic partner, you know, that they never would have partnered with me back 20 years ago when I was right. a knucklehead. But, you know, now they've seen the track record and, you know, my life over the last 20 years, and, you know, to the point where they wanted to go into business with me. So that to me only is the power of God. Because I told you, I still don't have a college degree, you know, but here I am running, you know, basically I'm a third of our big company. And, you know, yeah. there's basically three leaders, you know, the hospital partner and then our basketball partner and myself. And we run, you know, two facilities, about to have a third. And in the next 5 years, we should have 10.
Amazing.
With some things in the works. And so it's only by God's grace and his guidance that I'm able to go and do the things I'm doing and have the wisdom to make the right decision. So, yeah, seek God early, yeah. seek him first, and the rest will fall into place.
Yeah, that's a great, great word to end on. I think of Paul's words to Timothy when he says, train yourself to be godly. And it does take effort to invest in our relationship with God. It does take getting up early sometimes. It does take saying no to some things so you can say yes to those kind of investments. But the thing is, you know, again, back to this idea of you've talked about it multiple times, what it means to then experience his grace and favor over your life. You know, I've had days where I'm like stressing about a message and I'm tempted. I got to write like a full sermon and whatever happened that week, I don't have the time I normally would have. And I'm freaking out and I'm tempted to like cut back on the time I'd spend in the morning just in his word and just praying just for me and him, not dealing with the message. And I'm like, no, I'm going to sit there with him. And then like the message, when I comes down to write it, it's like a direct download from heaven and it takes half the time that my normal message, you know, took. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, thank you, Lord. And just this is what happens when you put him first is he does some things that you couldn't have done yourself. So I think that's a great word to end on. And again, Will, just appreciate your story, appreciate your example and leadership, and can't wait to next time I'm in Fort Wayne. I'm not just gonna. It was closed. Your place was closed when I was there, so I only got to see that. I saw the outdoor side of it, but next time I'm there, hopefully I can get on the inside and see what's going on. But appreciate you coming on today, and I hope you have a great week.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and yeah, definitely look forward to seeing you next time you're in town.
Wow, y'all, that was a great conversation with Will. What a story. My goodness. Between serving time in prison, coming out, starting a business, being able to still see his volleyball career get like resurrected, and now being a husband and a dad, it's just amazing to see what God can do when we give our lives to him. So I hope that encouraged your heart today. I know most of you don't have a story like Will's, but let me tell you something. If you have a relationship with Jesus, you have a God like Will's. And so that means that just like God did incredible things through his life, he can do the same through yours when you give your whole life to him. Listen, if you have enjoyed this conversation, please rate and review us. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we have more great conversations on the way. And so until next time, know God made you to to advance.